This is Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Ricky Bevington. Aretha Franklin died yesterday at the age of 76. Raised in Detroit, her career spanned decades and genres from gospel to jazz to her signature sound as the Queen of Soul. Chuck Reese is the editor-in-chief and co-founder of the magazine The Bitter Southerner. After hearing of Franklin's passing, he published an essay called Aretha Goes Home. Reese recorded an excerpt for us, beginning with the struggle for civil rights in the 1950s and 60s.
Even as countless heartless crimes were committed against African Americans, small groups of Southern blacks and whites worked together in secret to build a monument of great beauty, a cultural achievement that will stand until the end of time. And their workshops were recording studios. The monument they built was called Soul Music. Blacks and whites together built resplendent musical bridges over the old divide and did it primarily in two places, Memphis, Tennessee and Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Thus, in January of 1967, a 24-year-old Aretha Franklin came to Muscle Shoals in search of her groove. After Columbia Records head John Hammond signed Franklin in 1961, he always seemed unable to find the right sound for Franklin's remarkable voice. Her early albums on Columbia cast her, for the most part, as a jazz singer, and none of them climbed higher than 69 on the U.S. album chart.
Skylark, have you anything?
After Columbia's final attempt, 1966's Soul Sister stalled out. Aretha Franklin moved to Atlantic Records under the direction of Jerry Wexler, one of the label's founders. Wexler brought Franklin to Rick Hall's Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, where she spent January and February of 1967 recording with Shoals masters like Spooner Oldham, Jimmy Johnson, Chips Moman, Tommy Cogbill, and David Hood. The result was an album called I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. The album was released in March, and it jumped to number one on the U.S. R&B album charts and number two on the Hot 200. And it produced Franklin's first two hit singles, her definitive version of Otis Redding's Respect and the title cut written by Ronnie Shannon. That album made and still makes perfect, beautiful Southern sense to me. When word that Franklin was gravely ill came earlier this week, I put it back on my turntable, and it reminded me, as it always has, Aretha Franklin had to come home to find the music that could do justice to her inimitable voice and would rocket her to stardom. Now, I know the South technically was not her home. Aretha grew up in Detroit. But her roots in the South run as deeply as those of any African-American family that departed our region during Jim Crow and the Great Migration. She was born in Memphis, but she was only 4 years old when her father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin, the son of Sunflower County, Mississippi sharecroppers, settled in Detroit as pastor of the New Bethel Baptist Church. Aretha's singing career bloomed in that church. She recorded her first album, a gospel record called Songs of Faith, at New Bethel in 1956 when she was only 14. Listen to that record if you can find it, and you'll hear just how far the threads of Southern music had traveled by the mid-20th century. Black families carried the gospel sounds of their churches with them as they dispersed across the Midwest and the Northeast to escape Jim Crow, and their music remained intact in those new locations. The conclusion is inescapable. Aretha's musical roots were as Southern as any of you are. And if you're a student of Southern culture, it must always be noted, she might have never become a superstar had she not come home to the South. David Hood, who is known most widely as the bass player in the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, played on I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, but not the bass. He played trombone in the horn section. He remembers Aretha as a shy young woman who didn't tell the musicians what she was going for and instead just showed them. David said people were recording her wrong and he wanted to bring her to Muscle Shoals. It was to get her a little bit more funky style, but also to have her play the piano while she sang. It helped the musicians find the style and get the feel that she wanted. And I think that's what made the difference. On nearly all the best cuts she ever did, she was playing the piano as well as singing. In other words, she was doing the same thing she'd done in church since she was a teenager, playing and singing the gospel. David said you could just pick up the feeling from her piano. She grew up in a church and had that piano style and vocal style, and that's what Jerry wanted, and that's what everybody picked up on, I think. You see, Aretha's apple had not fallen too far from the tree. After Aretha's passing was confirmed, I spoke with another man who played on I Never Loved a Man the Way That I Love You, the legendary keyboardist and songwriter Spooner Oldham. Spooner told me her dad had been a preacher, a Baptist preacher, and she sang at church as a child prodigy. So coming to Muscle Shoals probably resonated the Southern experience in her brain, even though she had been gone forever. And then, when she was allowed to turn loose with all that Southern expression, we just played our hearts out because we were used to that stuff. I was curious because I knew she hadn't been around the South much, but she was belting that stuff out like she'd known it forever. And the truth was, she had known it forever. Oldham told me this. Between the sessions, Aretha had been practicing at home with her sisters and family, singing those backup things. And then, when I first heard that, respect just a little bit, all of that was brand new. It had never been done before. I knew something was going on then, you know. I knew it was going to turn the world around.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take out C-C-T.
Aretha Franklin did turn the world around, starting with that album's release in March of 1967. On the first cut, she transformed Otis Redding's pleas for a little respect from his woman into a monumental anthem for all women who got precious little respect in those days. For 20 more years, she consistently put singles at number one on the charts, making us dance, sway, even cry. For those of us who grew up on soul music, these and many other songs are landmarks, caches in which we hide our own memories, touchstones we all go back to repeatedly because they inspire us, comfort us, make us dance as we did in our youth. No voice ever dominated a genre of music as completely as Aretha's. The Queen of Soul title has no hyperbole in it. These men in Muscle Shoals never claim responsibility for Aretha's sound. They know that her sound was in her roots, but it was in theirs too, and they just played along. They know that in the long run, she helped them more than they helped her. She put their work in demand, and they are all extraordinarily aware of that, humble about it, and deeply grateful. Hood told me a story about the last time he played with Aretha in 2011 at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. David said, "I was part of the stage band. We were doing a tribute to Aretha show, and she was not supposed to play or sing or anything. But at the very end of the show, she decided she would sing. She did a song for you, and my God, I just stood there behind her and tried to find what she was playing and play along with her. I didn't have a chart or anything. That was a great moment." I went back and watched the video from that night, and you can see Hood struggle a bit as Aretha sits at the piano and renders a highly improvisational and profoundly church-like version of Leon Russell's classic song. You can also see a giant smile plastered on David's face in that moment, as if he knew his own notes didn't matter much because the Queen had the crown in the palm of her hand all on her own, even in this utterly unrehearsed moment. But the thing David Hood remembers most about that night was how much Aretha Franklin had changed in the 34 years between his first meeting with her and that evening in Cleveland. David told me, when she came into the theater, we were backstage eating and hanging out. And when she came in, it was like the Queen of England had come in. Everybody was so in awe of her presence. That was entirely different from the way it was in the beginning, when she was just a young woman who was very shy. But when she came in that last time I saw her, it was like Queen Elizabeth walking in the room. As soon as I heard David say that, one question hit me hard. What must the vibe in heaven be like today, now that the Queen has just arrived?
Chuck Reese is editor-in-chief and co-founder of the magazine The Bitter Southerner. This audio postcard was adapted from his essay, Aretha Goes Home, and was produced by Stephen Fowler.